221. Lyman Wilbur, president of Stanford. Newsweek June 7, 954 noted that Coover said, in 1915, while head of the Committee on Relief in Belgium, I happened to read some remarks by President Andrew White of Cornell made at a conference on the disappearance of contemporaneous documents and fugitive literature. Coover says he resolved to institute a search of Europe after the war to obtain documents and preserve them in an academic setting. Gilman and Wilbur aided him in planning this program. Both White and Gilman were original incorporators of the Russell Trust, which has dominated American education for a century. Wilbur requested that Coover install this collection at Stanford. Wilbur served as director of the Rockefeller Foundation 1923-40, and General Education Board, 193040. His nephew and successor as president at Stanford, Richard Lyman, is now president of the Rockefeller Foundation. Wilbur also served as Secretary of the Interior in Hoover's cabinet 1929-33. During this period, he signed the contracts for Hoover Dam, having thought up that name. The dam was not completed until, after FDR took office, he maliciously ordered his Secretary of Interior, Harold Ickes, to change the name to Boulder Dam. Hoover points out in his memoirs that two-thirds of the work had been done during the Hoover administration. All contracts were let, as Hoover Dam, as was customary with many presidents with works named after them when these works were done during their administrations. On May 8, 1933, Secretary Ickes, on orders from Roosevelt, changed the name to Boulder Dam. Roosevelt dedicated the dam September 30, 1933 without mentioning Hoover or the fact that most of the work had been done during the Hoover administration. On March 10, 1947, the House unanimously voted to change the name back to Hoover Dam. Hoover wrote to Congressman Jack Z. Anderson, who had sponsored the bill, "When a president of the U.S. tears one's name down, that is a public defamation and an insult. I am grateful to you for removing it. Because of the importance of the Hoover Institution in the Reagan administration, it is important to recap the career of the man who founded it." As a mining stock promoter in London, Hoover had been barred from dealing on the London Stock Exchange, and Hyatt's associate, who apparently took the rap, went to prison for several years. The 230 incident brought Hoover to the favorable attention of the Rothschilds, who made him a director of their firm, Rio Tinto. Chairman was Lord Milner, who founded the Round Tables, which later became the Royal Institute of International Affairs and its subsidiary, the Council on Foreign Relations. In 1916, the promoters of World War I were dismayed when Germany insisted she could not continue in the war because of shortages of food and money. The Tsar's physician, Gleb Botkin, revealed in 1931 that the Kaiser's chief military advisor, and chief of his armies on the Russian border, Grand Duke of Hesse-Darmstadt, risked his life on a secret mission to Russia to Tsarskoe Selo, the imperial palace, where he asked his sister, Empress Alexandra, to let him talk to the Tsar about making a separate peace with Germany. The Empress, fearful of criticism, refused to receive him, and after spending the night at the palace, he was escorted back to the German lines. To keep Germany in the war, Paul Warburg, head of the Federal Reserve System, hastily arranged for credits to be routed to his brother, Max Warburg, through Stockholm to M.M. Warburg Company, Hamburg. Food presented a more difficult problem. It was finally decided to ship it directly to Belgium as relief for the starving Belgians. The supplies could then be shipped over Rothschild railway lines into Germany. As director for this relief operation, the Rothschilds chose Herbert Hoover. His partner in the relief commission was Emily Franquet, chosen by Baron Lambert, head of the Belgian Rothschild family. The plan was so successful that it kept World War I going for an additional 2 years, allowing the U.S. to get into the war to end wars. Point. John Hamill, author of The Strange Career of Herbert Hoover, states that Emil Franquet, director of Société Générale, a Jesuit bank, opened an office in his bank as the National Relief and Food Committee, with a letter of authorization from the German Governor General von der Goltz. Franquet then went to London with this letter, accompanied by Baron Lambert, head of the Belgian Rothschilds, and Hugh Gibson, secretary of the American legation in Brussels. 231. The report of the National Committee states that the National Committee and its subsidiary organizations were not subject to control of the Belgian public administration, and neither was it accountable to the public as a public authority. The National Committee existed by itself according to the will of its founders and those who had given it their support. That is, why it was sovereign in the decisions it made and excluded all control of its actions by the public. Hamel says, from its commencement, the food division had been organized and conducted on a commercial basis. The Commission for Relief in Belgium raised its sale prices to the National Committee by an amount equivalent to the profit that had formerly been taken by it. Hoover referred to this as benevolence. Franquet had previously been a partner of Hoover in the Kaiping coal mine swindle in China, which set off the Boxer Rebellion, the Chinese vowing to kill all white devils in China, and the Congo atrocities, where Franquet was remembered by the sobriquet, the Butcher of the Congo. He was an ideal choice to be partner in a benevolent enterprise. The National Committee report published in 1919 showed that as of Dec 31,1918 the committee had spent $260 million. In 1921, trying to make the accounts balance, this figure was revised upward to $442 million showed, as spent during the same period. However, $182 million wasn't accounted for. In Dec 1918, Franquet showed expenditure for relief of $40 million, four times as much as for any previous month, although the war was now over. On January 13, 1932, the New York Times reported widespread attacks on Hoover in the Belgian press, that President Hoover, during his Belgian relief days, had manifestly been party to a scheme to make money out of Belgium. Hoover was then appointed U.S. Food Administrator in Washington. Although the operation was principally run by Louis L. Strauss of Kuhn, Leib Company, Hoover still depended heavily on his longtime associate, Edgar Rickard. On November 13, 1918, Hoover sent a letter to President Wilson requesting authority for Edgar Rickard to 232. Act in my stead, while he was in Europe. Wilson signed the letter November 16, 1918, whereas by virtue of executive order November 16, Edgar Rickard now exorcises all powers heretofore delegated to Herbert Hoover as U.S. Food Administrator. Rickard assumed the title of Acting Food Administrator in Washington according to a letter from Herbert Hoover January 17, since my departure to come to conference in Paris. The U.S. Food Administration was then split into four divisions: Sugar Equalization Board, Belgian Relief, U.S. Grain Corporation, and U.S. Shipping Board. On Dec 16, 1918, Wilson sent a letter to the State Department and executive order, please pay at once to the U.S. Food Administration Grain Corporation $5 million from my fund for national security and defense. The order was referred to the Secretary of Treasury for payment and approved. Justice Brandeis biography by Mason notes, Norman Hapgood wrote Brandeis from London January 10, 1917, Herbert Hoover is the most interesting man I know. You will enjoy his experience in diplomacy, finance, etc. in England, France, Belgium and Germany. In early February he talked with Justice Brandeis, who arranged for him to see Senator McAdoo, Wilson's son-in-law, leading to Hoover's appointment as U.S. Food Administrator. On January 2, 1919, the New York Times noted the Senate debate in which Hoover was assailed for his proposed $100 million request for aid to Europe. The plan was criticized by Senator Penrose and Senator Gore as one that would unload the surplus of American meat packers in Europe. Senator Penrose asked Senator Martin, the Democratic floor leader, if Hoover is an American citizen and has ever voted in an American election. Martin retorted, I do not propose to be drawn into such an irrelevantism as that. Penrose then declared, I do not believe he is a citizen of the U.S., who has taken no oath of office, and whose allegiance is in doubt. The criticism so piqued Hoover that he signed a letter of resignation reciting his 4 years of public service without remuneration. It was never submitted and turned up many years later in the personal papers of his assistant, Louis L. Strauss. 233. The New York Times noted September 4, 1919 that Edgar Rickard had made a speech at Stanford University vigorously promoting the League of Nations. Hoover and Colonel House were also working together to obtain Senate approval and public approval for Wilson's League of Nations plan. The members of the Commission for Relief in Belgium team have subsequently played a very prominent role in the history of the U.S. Hoover became Secretary of Commerce and later President of the U.S. A team from Hoover Institution moved into Washington in 1980 as the vanguard of a conservative administration. Prentice Gray, Hoover's assistant in U.S. Food Administration, became president of J. Henry Schroeder Banking Corporation in 1922. Joyous H. Barnes, another Hoover associate, became chairman of J. Henry Schroeder Bank. Perhaps a surplus of relief funds subsequently purchased a number of American corporations. Barnes became president of Pitney Bowes, Pijepsket Paper, General Bronze, Barnes Ames Corporation, Northwest Bem Corporation, and Erie and St. Lawrence Corporation. Edgar Rickard, Hoover as partner, since they won launched a magazine IN1909 to promote their mining stocks, had been honorary secretary of Commission for Relief in Belgium. He now became president of Androscoggin Water Power Company, president Belgo-American Trading Co., vice president, Erie and St. Lawrence Corporation, President Hazard Wire Rope Company, President Hazeltine Corporation, Vice President Intercontinental Development Corporation, President Ladder Corporation, President Pijepsket Paper Company, and Vice President Pitney Bowes Company, Chairman Wood Fiber Board Corporation. Robert Grant of the U.S. Food Administration became Director of the U.S. Mint in Washington. Prentice Gray became Vice President. British American Continental Corporation, Electric Shareholdings Corporation, Hydroelectric Securities Corporation, Manatee Sugar Corporation, St. Regis Paper, Swiss American Electric Prudential Investors, International Holdings and Investment Corporation, the last two being companies controlled by Société Générale and Franquet.Fes investment firms were organized by Belgian capitalist Captain Alfred Lowenstein, who mysteriously vanished from his plane while flying over the English Channel. While his closest advisors pursued their multi-million-dollar careers, Herbert Hoover remained dedicated to his ideals of public PJ service. He became Secretary of Commerce and chose Ashes Secretary Christian A. Herder, who had been his secretary at the Belgian Relief Commission, 1920-21, and had also been secretary of the American Commission to negotiate peace. He was secretary to Hoover 1919-24 at Commerce. He married into the Pratt family of Standard Oil, who gave their Manhattan mansion as headquarters for the CFR, and he was later appointed Secretary of State. Charles Michelson wrote of Hoover's career at the Department of Commerce, in The Ghost Talks, 1944, officially, Mr. Hoover was ever a promoter. When he took over the Department of Commerce, it was a reasonably modern organization. He took the Bureau of Mines from Interior. He dipped into the State Department when he realized his idea of commercial agents abroad and left the old commercial attaches of our legations jobless. It was not by accident that he builded for his department the hugest and perhaps the most lavishly furnished palace that housed a branch of the government. One of Hoover's most notable deeds, as Secretary of Commerce, was his award of the Hazeltine radio patents to his partner, since 1909, Edgar Rickard, a gift conservatively estimated to be worth at that time $1 million. When Hoover organized his campaign for the presidency, he gave as his personal address Suite 2000. 42 Broadway, New York, Suite 2000 was also listed as the office of Edgar Rickard. It was also the address of Hoover's erstwhile accomplice in the U.S. Food Administration, Joyous H. Barnes, chairman of the Schroeder Bank, which was to soon win notoriety as Hitler's personal bank. Although Wild Bill Donovan had served Hoover faithfully for 4 years, while he sought the nomination to the presidency, Hoover did not hesitate to cast him aside when he became a political liability because of his Catholic religion. The New York Times noted June 17, 1928. W.A. Bechtel, San Francisco, sent a congratulatory telegram to the nominee. In behalf of the construction industry, we congratulate the Republican Party on its selection of a candidate for chief engineer. 234. 235. Of the greatest business in the world for the next 4 years, one of our fellow Californians who has shown yourself deserving of this great honor. Hoover was soon preparing contracts for the largest public work of that time, the Hoover Dam, of which Bechtel was to become the chief contractor. Despite his charitable preoccupations, Hoover still engaged in free enterprise. On Deck 7, 1919, he and his partner Joyous H. Barnes had bought the Washington Herald. It was later acquired by the Patterson-McCormick family, and still later, by Eugene Meyer, who promptly closed it down. Barnes also bought the Penobscot Paper Company. For $750,000 in 1919, he happened to have some extra cash on hand. The New York Times, January 28, that Colonel House was busily developing a boom at Austin, Texas for Hoover as president, with the aid of some British friends. The Times further noted January 28, first 920, that the British government denied that Lord Grey was taking part in the Hoover boom. At a dinner at the Hotel Commodore, April 23, 1920, Julius Barnes and Herbert Hoover were the guests of honor. The keynote speaker announced that the name of Herbert Hoover was known throughout the civilized world. From the time that White, Gilman, and Wilbur persuaded Hoover to gather documents for the Hoover Library, much support was made available from official sources. Even then, no one was sure just how World War I had gotten started. It was to someone's interest to see to it that as many pertinent and secret documents from the warring powers should be gathered in one place, gone over and, if necessary, secluded from prying eyes. Hoover was able to call upon General Pershing to provide hundreds of army officers to aid him in his quest. In his foreword to the special collection of the Hoover Library, Hoover says that he recruited 1,500 officers from the American Army and the Supreme Economic Council, and sent them to all parts of Europe. The New York Times, February 5, says that Hoover had as many as 4,000 agents in Europe, going from country to country to gather these documents. Even in those pre-inflationary times, the cost of maintaining 4,000 agents in Europe must have been prohibitive. No one has ever found out who was paying them. Also, many of the documents were purchased outright. The only expenditure Hoover ever made public was the original $50,000 he had given in 1919 to establish the library. Who spent millions of dollars to put this collection together? It is most unlikely that Hoover would have parted with such sums, but no one has ever admitted putting any money into this project. The Times noted in the Hotel Commodore story that Hoover, a member of the first graduating class at Stanford, had presented the school with a collection of 375,000 volumes. It included the most valuable collection of secret Bolshevik records in existence, among them, the lists of the original district Soviets, which had been bought from a doorkeeper for $200. The Times noted that the Soviet government had no copies of these rare archives. Time, June 30, 1941, noted that the Bolsheviks had allowed Hoover to remove 25 carloads of material, at a time when Russian refugees were permitted to leave only with the clothes on their backs. The solicitude for Hoover's collection may have been influenced by the fact that he had saved the infant Bolshevik regime from extinction by rushing large quantities of food to them. Hoover's collection also included the complete secret files of the German War Council during World War I, a gift from President Ebert, Mataheri's diary, and 60 rare volumes from the Tsar's personal library. Many of the collections were permanently sealed. Time noted that the Hoover Institution contained 300 sealed collections, which no one has ever been allowed to examine. One can only speculate whether interested parties, perhaps the Rothschilds, Hoover's employers, determined at the close of World War I to remove the secret documents of Europe's warring nations to some fair of place, such as the west coast of America, to lessen their political liability, damaging evidence of various acts of collusion. The 236. 237. Initial organization of the material was done by a Stanford professor of history, Ephraim D. Adams, 1-865-1930. Adams and his wife were installed in an office in Paris May 22, to receive the first shipments of documents. Other offices were Panini in Berlin, London, and New York. Aiding Adams were Dr. Alonzo Engelbert Tyler, who had been educated at the University of Berlin, served on War Trade Board 191719, and staff member of Stanford Food Research Institute Dr. Carl Barak Alsberg, also educated at University of Berlin, worked for the Department of Agriculture, and Dr. Joseph Stancliffe Davis, a Harvard professor of economics. The advisory committee of the original Hoover Library consisted of Dr. James R. Angel, President of Yale, and President Carnegie Corporation. Dr. J. C. Merriam, educated at the University of Munich, CHM in NAPL Research Council, and Carnegie Institution, Herbert Hoover, and Julius H. Barnes. Professor Adams was director of the Hoover Library 1920-25. He was succeeded by Ralph H. Lutz, who headed the library from 1925 to 44. Lutz had served on the Supreme Economic Council, Paris under Bernard Baruch 1918-19. In 1910 he received a Ph.D. from the University of Heidelberg. He had taken his undergraduate degree from Stanford 1906. He had served as vice CHM in Hoover Library under Adams 1920-25. Harold H. Fisher was director Hoover Library 1944-52. He had been deputy director of American Relief Administration and its chief historian under Hoover 1920-24. He was professor of history at Stanford University from 1933 on, becoming emeritus in 1955, director of Hoover S. Belgian American Educational Foundation 1943-64, and chairman of the Pacific Council of IPR 1953-61 during the period when the FBI arrested a number of IPR executives and charged them with espionage. While chairman of IPR, Fisher continued to give his mailing address as Hoover Institution, Stanford University. The New York Times noted October 29th that Hoover, as President of the U.S., had sent greetings to the IPR meeting, my best greetings and wishes. 23s. The next director of the Hoover Institution was C. Easton Rothwell, 1952-60. He had been chairman of research at the Hoover Institution 1947-52. From 1941-46, he served as chief of SPEC, Research and Political Affairs, Department. State, he was executive. Second's UN conference at San Francisco 1945 under Alger Hiss, was on the staff of Brookings Institution 19467, staff of the NAPL War College 1951, delegate to Fulbright Conference, Cambridge, England 1954. In 1960, the library, now known as the Hoover Institution on War, Revolution and Peace, was headed by Wesley Glenn Campbell, who is still its director. Born in Ontario, Campbell took his degree from Harvard 1946, Ph.D. 1948, and taught there in the economics department. 5 years. He became economist for the Chamber of Commerce 1951-54, American Enterprise Institute, 1954-60, when he became head of Hoover Institution. He is director of Hoover's Belgian American Education Foundation, and the super secret Mont Pelerin Society, which publishes no information about its meetings. Campbell married Rita Ricardo, who continues to use her maiden name. She is a direct descendant of the famed economist, David Ricardo, whose theory of rent was appropriated by Karl Marx. Ricardo also originated the law of wages, which states that workers must be limited to a bare subsistence wage, the amount controlled by taxation. Ricardo also regarded workers as mere producers of labor time, a theory which Marx adopted as basic to his concept of labor. It embodies the classic parasitic view that the host exists only to produce sustenance for the parasite, and has no right to the products and gains of his own labor. An article in Change, October 1981, states that Rita Ricardo helped shape Reagan's thinking on Social Security and National Health Insurance, both of which are applied as taxation on the worker's income. In 1964, Campbell and other Hoover personnel were the chief advisors of the Goldwater campaign. Within 2 decades, they had become the most influential policymakers at the White House. The New York Times index for the period of Hoover's presidency, 1929-33, contains no references to either Stanford or the Hoover. 231. Library. On June 23, the Times noted that the ex-president would maintain an office at Stanford. Instead, he took a suite at New York's Waldorf Astoria, and spent the remainder of his life there. Although he was rarely seen at the Hoover Institution, he presided over the annual gatherings of the West Coast powerhouse, Bohemian Grove, and was viewed as its reigning figure. The New York Times March 24, 1935 referred to Hoover as Palo Alto Brain Trust, although the Brain Trust did not take power in Washington until 1980. On June 30, 1941, a new 14-story, 210 feet building, costing $1.2 million, was dedicated for the Hoover Institution at Stanford by President Seymour of Yale, a Romanesque tower housing some 5 million documents, many of them sealed. The Saturday Evening Post, March 11, noted that Edgar Rickard, director of FCAP-OOVER Institution, had raised $600,000 in 1937 towards the cost of tree new building. Hoover stated that the purpose of the library was to expose through research the inequities of communism, although he had originally written it as to demonstrate the evils of the doctrine of Karl Marx. A later president of Stanford, Wallace Stirling, re-edited this in 1960 to read "To Expand Human Knowledge, That Human Welfare May Thus Be Enhanced," a classic example of Orwell's doublethink. Stirling explained this act of censorship by claiming, "We cannot have research with predetermined conclusion." Stirling, also born in Ontario, had been a member of the Hoover research staff from 1930-37, was awarded the Hoover Medal. He was with the Ditcliffe Foundation 1962-76, and has served on the staff of Hugh and the Nettlewar College. On July 21, 1957, the Hoover Library officially changed its name to Hoover Institution on War, Peace and Revolution. It receives funding from Lilly, Pew, and Volcker Funds, and the Sarah Mellon Scaife Foundation. Ford Foundation gave it $255,000 in 1953. On July 6, 1943, the Lilly Fund had financed a three-day conference at the Institution for Bertram Wolfe, New York, Raymond Aron, France, 240, and Richard Lowenstein of Berlin. All of these beneficiaries were old-line liberals. In 1927, because of Wilbur's directorship there, the Rockefeller Foundation gave the Hoover Library $200,000 for Slavic studies. The Carnegie Corporation also gave $180,000. On January 7, 1975, President Ford signed a $30 million scholarship bill. Tacked onto it was a $7 million grant to the Hoover Institution. The Department of Justice gave the Hoover $600,000 to study crime. Stanford University's campus is world headquarters for Hewlett-Packard and the multi-billion electronics industry. The 8,800 acres of Stanford's campus was originally Leland Stanford's Palo Alto stock farm, which he endowed with some $20 million. The campus houses a $105 million Atomic Energy Commission laboratory built through the influence of L.L. Strauss, chairman of AEC and director of Hoover Institution. 2,000 acres have been set aside for rental units. A shopping center on the campus pays $500,000 rent annually. The 300-acre Stanford Research Park houses the world headquarters of Hewlett-Packard. In 1912, Lee DeForest invented the vacuum tube in Palo Alto, launching the radio industry. Professor Louis Terman of Stanford invented the Stanford-Binet 1Q test, his son Fred became professor of electric engineering at Stanford, and persuaded two of his students, Bill Hewlett and Dave Packard, to start an electronics concern. Hewlett-Packard now has $4.4 billion annual sales, 68,000 employees. Fortune says Bill Hewlett is worth $1,045 billion, Dave Packard is worth $2.01 billion. Professor Willie M. Shockley invented the transistor here, one launching the Silicon Valley complex. His invention was later taken over by Fairchild Semiconductor, which is now owned by Schlumberger Incorporated. Shockley received little or nothing for his discovery. Stanford received $3 million from the Ford Foundation for a medical center, and in September 1, 1959, the Ford Foundation gave Stanford $25 million, its largest gift to any educational institution. The New York Times noted on October 10 that Stanford, known as the 241 Harvard of the West, had completed a $300 million fundraising campaign headed by R.J. Miller, former president of Ford Motor Company. The Harvard influence has always been strong at Stanford and the Hoover Institution. Donald Kennedy, who became president of Stanford in 1980, married Jean Dewey, took his OB, MA, and PhD from Harvard, and served on the Harvard Board of Overseers from 1970-76. He was Commissioner of Food and Drugs under President Carter 197779, before becoming President of Stanford. Stanford has other important real estate holdings. Time, January 14, 1966 noted that Stanford has a German castle at Butelsbach, a villa in Florence, a hotel in Tours, and occupies Harlaxton Manor, a 365-room stone mansion in Lincolnshire leased to Stanford by the Jesuits. The Guide to the Hoover Institution, published in 1980, notes that Rita Campbell is archivist, Robert Hessen is deputy archivist. The collection is composed of 24% North America, 26% Russia and Eastern Europe, 27% Western Europe, and 1.8% Latin America. Page 5 of the guide notes that the collection was inspired by two historians, Andrew D. White, president of Cornell, and Ephraim Adams of Stanford. Number 2358 in the collection is the Paris Files of the Tsarist Secret Police. Number 2373, the Files of the Imperial Russian Okhrana, Secret Police. Number 2382, a list of the atrocities committed by Soviet political agents in Kiev. On June 25, 1962, Alfred Kohlberg, known as the head of the China lobby, died. He left 15 cabinets of papers which are restricted until 199-1. The maximum. E. Fleischmann Foundation spent $250,000 for Boris Nikolaevsky's 40-year collection of Russian documents, which were then presented to Hoover Institution. The Hoover Collection also includes the personal diaries of Joseph Goebbels and Heinrich Himmler, the files of Basil Malakoff, Soviet ambassador in Washington 1919-26, the files of the Bank for International Settlements, and the official Japanese records of the attack on Pearl Harbor. In 1966, Alan H. Belmont joined the Hoover as executive assistant to the director. He had formerly been with the FBI 1936-65, serving as personal assistant to J. Edgar Hoover. Also at the Hoover was Stefan Posseny, educated at the University of Vienna, came to the U.S. in 1940, was advisor to the War Department 1943-46, and was appointed Director of International Political Studies at the Hoover in 1961. In 1963, the directors of the Hoover Institution included Richard Emberg, publisher of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Clarence Bamberger, mining engineer, William J. Berge, who had founded the American Enterprise Institute, and was chairman of the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, Carl R. Bendetson, chairman of Champion Paper, was Special War Department representative to General MacArthur 1941, Spec, advisor to Secretary of the Army, Assistant Secretary of Defense 1948-52, chairman of the Panama Canal Company, and ambassador to West Germany and the Philippine Islands, James B. Black Jr. of Lehman Brothers, Arthur Curtis CHM in General Motors, Paul L. Davies Jr. who directed the evacuation of the Japanese from the West Coast to concentration camps in 194-1, heads leading West Coast law firm of Pillsbury Madison and Sutro, partner Lehman Brothers, director of IBM, Southern Pacific and Caterpillar, North Kittily, Washington. Lawyer who represented Secretary Wilbur in negotiating the contracts for Hoover Dam 193033, Richard Point Guggenheim, president of Rosenberg Foundation, Harold H. Helm, CHM in Chemical Bank, director of Westinghouse, Unioil, Colgate, Woolworth, Bethlehem Steel, Equitable, McDonnell Douglas, and Cummins Engine, John A. McKinney-Off Bechtel McCone 1937-45, und Secretary F195051 CHM in AEC 1958-60, Director CIA 1961-65, in Loyal McLaren, President of the Billion Dollar James Irvine Foundation, was Treasurer of the UN Conference at San Francisco 1945 under Alger Hiss, was also appointed to Allied Commission on Reparations 1945. Jeremiah Milbank, New York financier, head of the Milbank Foundation and director Chase Manhattan Bank, George C. Montgomery, chairman of Kern County Land Company, William I. Nichols, publisher of This Week, served with War Production Board 1942-45, David Packard, CHM in Hewlett-Packard, his personal fortune increased by $C billion in 1983, Richard M. Scaife, Vice President Mellon Metal Bank, Admiral L.L. Strauss, of Kuhn, Leib Company, CHM in AEC 194650, lists himself in Who's Who as financial advisor to Messrs. Rockefeller, R. Douglas Stewart. 243. Ford, Rockefeller, and Guggenheim, Thomas Dale Moore was Reagan's expert on energy policy, Paul Craig Roberts became assistant secretary. Treasury, Richard V. Allen, who had been on the staff of the Hoover Institution since 1966, served on National Security Council 1969, departure assistant to the President 1969-70, now became Reagan's assistant for national security affairs. Martin Anderson, senior fellow at Hoover Institution 1971-81, became Reagan's ast for policy development. He thought up the ridiculous boondoggle of urban enterprise zones. One of the Hoover hotshots on Reagan's team was described in Omni March 1984 Continuum, Honegger Hotline. President aide Barbara Honegger was hired by Martin Anderson at Hoover Institution. While writing a book on the draft, she wore a scarab necklace and was the first graduate in experimental psychology at John F. Kennedy University, Olinda, California. She had advised Reagan to decide against underground shells of MX missiles, because psychics would target them. She had him put 5,500 additional warheads on our 43 nuclear submarines, because psychic brainwaves are absorbed by the churning sea. Despite Anderson's protests, she was finally ushered out of the White House. So much for the extreme right in scarab necklaces and dodging psychic brainwaves. Campbell's presidential transition team spent $1 million from donors plus $2 million provided by Congress, but could not get a single right-winger installed on Reagan's staff. The largest payment went to longtime liberal Joseph Califano, who was paid $86,047.93 for representing Alexander Haig at his Senate confirmation hearings as Secretary of State. Right-winger Haig said Califano was an old-time friend. The deputy director of the transition team, Vern Orr, served as controller of the Reagan campaign and is now Secretary of the Air Force. Seymour Martin Lipset, who voted for John Anderson in 1980, took a survey of the 25 Hoover Fellows in 1984. He found 11 Democrats, 10 Republicans, 3 Independent, and 1 who was not a citizen. The 3 honorary fellows of Hoover Institution are Ronald Reagan, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, and Frederick von Hayek. Reagan. 246. Is in Washington. Solzhenitsyn lives in Vermont. Von Hayek is retired in Salzburg. None of them has any connection with the administration of the Hoover Institution. Reagan has already donated his papers to the Hoover Institution. In June 1981, Hoover Institution held a gala reception at the Sheraton Carlton in Washington, with many White House officials present. They effectively short-circuited all of Reagan's campaign promises for lower taxes, decreased government spending, and the goal of getting the government off of our backs. The present star of the Hoover Institution is Milton Friedman, who is credited with bringing economic disaster to Chile, Israel, the United States, and other countries in which his monetarist theories have been introduced. Friedman's monetarism is the same old banker's swindle of endless creation of more interest-bearing debt money, requiring ever-increasing taxes merely to meet the interest payments. He and Jack Kemp are now pushing for a flat tax to lock Americans into a tax corral from which they can never hope to escape. Friedman came to the Hoover in 1977 as senior research fellow, simultaneously accepting a post as economic consultant to the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco. He and his consort, Murray Rothbard, dominate a closely interlocked network of hard money conservative groups, which includes the Heritage Foundation, Mont Pelerin Society, Cato Institute, Ludwig von Mises Institute, and American Enterprise Institute, which hold banquet meetings, always with no visible result. Their mentor is the late Ludwig von Mises, born in Austria, and founder of the Austrian School of Economics, who taught at New York University from 1946 until his death. The institute is now run by his widow, Margit Hertzfeld, to whom President Reagan said, at a testimonial dinner for her husband, "You don't know how often I consult the books of your husband before making a decision." She still doesn't know. At the age of 16, Milton Friedman became the protege of Arthur Burns at Rutgers and Columbia. Their economic principles stemmed from the Viennese school founded by Karl Menger and Eugen von. 247. President Quaker Oats, Gardner Simons, CHM in Tenneco, Kern County Land Company, Robert C. Tyson, CHM in U.S. Steel, Director Chemical Bank, Unioil, those. J. Watson Jr., CHM in IBM, Director Rockefeller Foundation, Stephen Duggan, CHM in Emeritus Institute of International Education, father of late Lawrence Duggan, who died mysteriously, member of World Peace Foundation, League of Nations Association, John Foster Dulles, Anson Phelps Stokes, of the Institute of International Education, Director General Education Board, Harold H. Swift, CHMN, Swift Packing Company, CHMN, War Finance Committee, Department of Treasury, 194-1244, Augustus Trowbridge, Intelligence Director of American Export Force under Pershing in World War I. In 1980, the directors of Hoover Institution included Benditson, Black, Philip Habib, of Bechtel, and Reagan's Special Ambassador to the Middle East, Henry T. Bodman, Chairman Natal Bank of Detroit, Director and Vice CHMN American Enterprise Institute. His son Richard served with the Treasury Department, was Assistant Secretary. Interior, now President of ComSat, David Tennant Bryan, married into the Harkness family, CHMN Media General, Willard C. Butcher, former CHMN Chase Manhattan, now Director American Enterprise Institute, Joseph Kors, Director Heritage Foundation, Charles A. Dana Jr., Director Manufacturers Hanover Trust, Dana Foundation, Shelby Cullen Davis, was with CBS 1932-34, economic advisor to Dewey in his presidential campaigns, ambassador to Switzerland 1969-75, trustee of Princeton, Heritage Foundation, Morris Greenberg, President American International Group, Alan Greenspan, President Economics Advisors, since 1981, consultant to U.S. Treasury and Federal Reserve Board. 1971-74, Director Time, General Foods, J.P. Morgan, Morgan Guarantee Trust, Bryce Harlow, Assistant to President of U.S. 1959-61, and 1969-70, now Washington lobbyist for Procter & Gamble, A. Carol Kochian, President Lockheed, J. Clayton LaForce, Dean of Graduate School of Management, University of California, Fulbright Scholar, Director Natal Bureau of Economic Research, Mont Pelerin Society, William B. McComber Jr., President Metropolitan Museum, was with CIA 1951-53. Spec. Asked. For Intelligence at State Department. 1953-54, Spec. Assistant to UN Secretary State Herbert Hoover Jr. and Secretary of State John Foster Dulles 1955-57, Ambassador to Iran and Jordan. Emil Mosbacher Jr., known as Kingmaker, was Chief of Protocol State Department 1969-72, Director Chubb, Camille Bank, Avon, M. Axe. His brother Robert was Nat CHMN Bush for President CHMN Gerald Ford's unsuccessful election campaign, Co-CHMN Republican Natal Committee, David Packard, of Hewlett-Packard, American Enterprise Institute, Donald Rumsfeld, President Rand Corporation, President G.D. Searle, asked to President Nixon 1969-73, Perm. Representative to NATO 1973-74, Director of Sears, and Institute of Strategic Studies, London. Although the Butcher paper weeklies such as The Nation issue grim warnings that the Hoover Institution is deeply engaged in the practice of Cold War anti-communism, the New York Times has noted that the Hoover is surprisingly liberal. Its longtime senior fellow is Sidney Hook, old-line socialist who keeps a portrait of George Meany on his office wall. Seymour Martin Lipset, longtime liberal closely identified with the offices of Democratic Senators Henry Jackson and Daniel Moynihan, taught at Harvard, University of California, received the Goddard Myrtle Prize 1970, Nat CHMN Bnei Brith Hillel and United Jewish Appeal, John Bunzel, Democratic liberal now associated with the Libertarian Party, Stanley Fisher, liberal from MIT, Joseph Petchman, the Hoover Institution resident tax expert. He had been tax expert at Brookings Institution Washington for many years before coming to Hoover. Other resident liberals are Dennis J. Dahlin, Theodore Draper and Peter Duignan. Lipset was quoted in an interview in the New York Times as follows: "Over half the senior fellows here are not right-wingers, not even conservatives, they are left-wing Democrats and socialists. These are the architects of Reagan's right-wing administration, the usual flimflam in which the same tired old Marxists are trotted out as the inspired libertarians of a world run by the hard right." The head of Reagan's presidential transition team and cabinet appointments in 1980 was W. Glenn Campbell, Harvard graduate and head of Hoover Institution. Reagan's advisor on Social Security was his wife, Rita Ricardo Campbell. More than half of the Hoover staff went to Washington with Reagan. Richard Starr and Peter Duignan were his advisors on foreign policy. Duignan had received fellowships from 244, 245, Bulwark, Mentor von Hayek, Erich Voegelin and Fritz Machleis. At that time, Vienna was dominated by the House of Rothschild, which had controlled the national debt of Austria since the Congress of Vienna in 1815. Austria's Tyrol silver mines were owned by the Rothschilds, as were her railways. Empress Elizabeth's closest friend was Julie D. Rothschild, sister of Baron Albert, head of the Austrian house. Count Richard Coudenhove Kalergi, who founded the Pan-European Union, was named after Richard Wagner, one of whose students was Gustav Mahler. Mahler's studies with Wagner were funded by Baron Albert D. Rothschild. Coudenhove Kalergi's father was a close friend of Theodor Herzl, founder of Zionism. Coudenhove Kalergi writes in his memoirs, "At the beginning of 1924, we received a call from Baron Louis D. Rothschild, one of his friends, Max Warburg from Hamburg, had read my book and wanted to get to know us. To my great surprise, Warburg spontaneously offered us 60,000 gold marks to tide the movement over for its first 3 years. Max Warburg, who was one of the most distinguished and wisest men that I have ever come into contact with, had a principle of financing these movements. He remained sincerely interested in Pan-Europe for his entire life. Max Warburg arranged his 1925 trip to the United States to introduce me to Paul Warburg and financier Bernard Barrick. In Chicago, Jane Addams of Hull House had been for 5 years a protege of Beatrice Webb, founder of the Fabian Society. In 1892, the University of Chicago was organized as the center of the Fabian Socialist Program in America, with J. Lawrence Laughlin, spokesman for the Cogden Club's free trade program in England. Laughlin later became Paul Warburg's chief propagandist to stump for the passing of the Federal Reserve Act. John Dewey became head of the sociology department at the University of Chicago. Wesley Clair Mitchell was head of the economics department. In 1913, they moved to Columbia University. They were later hired by Barrick at the War Industries Board, and prepared all the statistics for American representatives at the Versailles Peace Conference. In February 1920, Mitchell met with the rest of the staff of Barrick's War Industries Board in New York with a roundtable group financed by Kuhn-Leib and Company and Lazard Freers, to found the National Bureau of Economic Research, of which Mitchell became director. His protege was Arthur Burns, later CHMN of the National Bureau, CHMN Federal Reserve Governors, partner of Lazard Freers, and U.S. Ambassador to West Germany. Burns then brought in his protege, Milton Friedman, who has proposed that we legalize the sale of dope to raise $100 billion a year for the GNP. Wesley Clair Mitchell's career was devoted to uniting the Austrian and British schools of economics in a single force to direct the American economy. He achieved success through the careers of his protégés, Burns and Friedman, who offer us the flat rate tax to pay interest on their bank-created debt money. It is the ancient European system introduced by the House of Rothschild to loot national economies by the rentier system of national debt. A keystone of the Friedman-Burns network is the Mont Pelerin Society, a secretive group of economists which meets every 2 years, but issues no findings or recommendations. These supposedly conservative hard money economists first met at Mont Pelerin, Switzerland in 1947 to oppose the left-wing statist economists who had dominated the field for 50 years. They were led by Friedrich von Hayek, a graduate of the Viennese School of Economics, who became a British citizen in 1938. He was took Prof. of Economics, University of London 1931-50, Prof. of Social and Moral Science at the University of Chicago 1952-62, and Prof. of Economics University of Freiburg 1926-69, when he retired to Salzburg. He was a disciple of Ludwig von Mises, who taught Henry Hazlitt, another founder of Mont Pelerin. Hazlitt reported the founding meeting in Newsweek, September 25, 1961, listing among those present Jacques Rouff, economic director of France, Pedro Beltran, president of Peru, Senator Luigi Einaudi, Prof. Economics at Torre in 1901-35, Governor of the Bank of Italy 1945-48, President of Italy 1948-55 Dr. Ludwig Erhard, Economic Minister of Germany, Director of World Bank, Wilhelm Röpke, Erhard S. Economic Advisor, Trygve Hoff, Norway, Møller Armack and William Rappard of Germany, Ludwig von Mises, Frank Knight, Milton Friedman and Henry Hazlitt. 248. 249. In 1962, the Mont Pelerin Society met at Knock, Belgium, announcing that the Mont Pelerin Society takes no formal action, passes no resolutions, and seeks no publicity. In 1970, the Society met in Munich, where Milton Friedman was elected president. Present were Wesley Campbell and Martin Anderson from the Hoover Institution. In 1974, 300 members of the Society met at Brussels, where they were addressed by Milton Friedman and his protégé Murray Rothbard. Rothbard was sponsored by the Cato Institute, a conservative group whose director, Earl C. Revenal, is also director of the Institute for Policy Studies, the left-wing policy-making organization founded by James Paul Warburg. Cato is funded by Charles Koch of Kansas, head of Koch Industries, who amassed a fortune of $700 million. He also funds the Libertarian Party, which calls for opening U.S. borders to all illegal immigrants, legalizing of drugs, and other alarming recommendations. Koch funds these groups through his bank, Morgan Guarantee Trust of New York. Cato gave a two-year grant to Rothbard to write a book, For a New Liberty, which says, before World War II, so devoted was Stalin to peace that he failed to make adequate provision against Nazi attack. Rothbard should have said, so devoted was Stalin to murder that he killed most of his army officers, leaving him vulnerable to Nazi attack. Rothbard asserts that the US is imperialist and warmongering, while the Soviet Union is peace-loving, rational and misunderstood. The Cato Institute magazine Inquiry lists 9 staff writers, among them Napo Hentoth of the Village Voice, Marcus Raskin, head of the Institute for Policy Studies, and Penny Lernaux, correspondent of The Nation, all of whom would be hurt if they were not described as extreme liberals. In 1975, George Roche III, who had become a member of the Society in 1971, hosted the meeting at Hillsdale College, of which he is president. William Buckley, also a member, addressed the group with a routine encomium for von Hayek. In 1980, the Mont Pelerin Society met at the Hoover Institution, with 600 members and guests present. Ralph Harris was guest speaker. As Margaret Thatcher's director of economics, he had been made Baron Harris of High Cross in 1979. Count Max Thurn. 250. Permanent secretary of the Society, also addressed the meeting. He is a member of the wealthy Thurnwood Taxis family, closely related to the British royal family. The Encyclopedia of Associations lists the Mont Pelerin Society care of Edwin Fuhler, Treasurer, Box 7031, Alexandria, VA, Secretary Dr. Max Thurn, Elisabeth Strasfor, Vienna. Fuhler is president of the Heritage Foundation, served as confidential assistant to Secretary of Defense 196970, Adm. Assistant Phil Crane 1942-44, Public Affairs Fellow Hoover Institution 1965-67, CHMN Institute European Strategy and Defense Studies London, since 1979. Heritage Foundation, part of the network of conservative groups, sponsored Reagan's posthumous award of the Medal of Freedom to Whitaker Chambers in March 1984. Its directors are Shelby Cullum Davis, Director of Hoover, Joseph Kors, Director of Hoover, Midge Dechter, Executive, Director Committee for a Free World, her husband is neoconservative Norman Potteritz, Editor of Commentary Magazine, Robert D. CHMN Smith Klein Drug Firm, Director United Technologies with William Simon, William Simon, Director Citibank, former Secretary of the Treasury, Louis E. Lehrman, head of the Lehrman Institute, John D. Rather, heir to an oil fortune, head of the entertainment conglomerate Rather Incorporated and director of Hoover,